Welcome to the WCHE Entertainment and Culture Show with your host, Stephen Brodsky. The WCHE Entertainment and Culture Show is your ticket to the world of arts, entertainment, and culture in Chester County and beyond. And now, here's your host, Stephen Brodsky.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Steve Goodman would have been 64 years old had he lived his short life ended at September 20th, 1984, at the young age of 36. Most folks know him through his song, City of New Orleans, which was a big hit for others. Very few people have heard Steve Goodman's own recording of that song. And what I'm going to do for you is give you a chance to hear that song, and then I'm going to bring on one of our most popular guests here on the show. He's been on 6 times prior. This is his 7th visit to the show. 7 is a number of perfection, and I'll tell you, this guest, Clay Eales, has written as close to a perfect bio as I've ever read, and it's the bio of Steve Goodman, Facing the Music. It's now in its 3rd updated printing, and before bringing Clay on for our audience, I'd like to share with you Steve Goodman doing his immortal song, City of New Orleans, and you're going to hear it's a live recording with a little bit of banter preceding it, so enjoy.
You wanted this one too, right? We're getting all the oldies out of the way here. Good guy pick hit of the week. John Philip Sousa has all his songs played at football games, and they did this at the Super Bowl. They had the cast of Up With People sang this song at halftime of the Super Bowl this year.
Aren't you proud?
Pretty wild to, you know, get shots of the cast Up With People from the Goodyear blimp while they're playing the song.
Thank you.
the disappearing railroad blues. And it's good night, American, how are you? And it's don't you know me, I'm your native son. And the train they call the city of New Orleans. Gone 500 miles when the day is done.
Rendition of City of New Orleans by the songwriter himself, Steve Goodman. With us on the phone from the state of Washington is the author of the updated third printing of Steve Goodman Facing the Music, Clay Eales. Clay, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you. Thanks, Stephen.
My gosh, when you hear that song probably for this thousandth or so time, what do you feel?
You know, Goodman himself said he never got tired of playing it, and it's one of those songs that isn't. I think it reaches down in a way that you really don't realize. It kind of reaches into your soul, knowing that you were going to be playing this, and knowing that you've played it before. I looked up a quote in the book. From somebody who heard it any number of times before, too. And this isn't somebody famous. This is Darcy Sanders, who was one of the founders of the Amazing Grace Cooperative in Evanston, where Goodman played concerts quite a bit. And this quote really, I think, really answers the question you ask. She says, "It's the best outsider anthem anyone has ever written for America." She says, "For people coming of age in the 60s and the 70s, that's how we all felt. We were the native sons and daughters, but maybe America didn't know us or recognize us. Who has not felt that their life is disappearing? It's the questioning, the trying to get closer, and yet the train is speeding away, the sense of the lost moment. That's how a whole generation felt about their relationship with America and themselves as Americans." And so on the surface, it's a train song, but it means so much more. It's about mortality, and, you know, the baby boom generation in particular is getting closer to its mortality. So I think about and I just intrinsically feel the deeper meanings of the song.
Clay, what was it like for you to work on and complete the updated third printing of Steve Goodman Facing the Music? And for folks who aren't aware, it's not a small book. It's 778 quality pages, and it has over 1,100 sources, including Arlo Guthrie, who wrote the foreword to the book. And it has contributions from John Prine, Steve Martin, Jimmy Buffett, Chris Christopherson, Bonnie Rae, Jackson Brown, Willie Nelson, Andrew Harris. The list goes on, and our own Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, as well. What were you feeling, and what was your most arduous task in getting this book back into print?
Well, my publisher said that they really wanted to keep it in print, and it sold out by the end of last year. It took a little while for the second printing to sell out. First printing sold out only in 8 months, and it's been now 5 years since it was first published. And so there's, you know, even though Goodman is no longer alive, there's been a lot that's happened over the last 3 or 4 years that I was able to add to the book because of the format of the book. The book is no different in its size. It because of the format with the rails on the outsides of the page, where you can add more footnotes and photographs, it's something that's relatively easy to update. And so I was eager to do that, to make it truly current. And also, you know, in the last 3 or 4 years, people who have seen the book have emailed me or called me and let me know of other information that's available or photos that they have that I was not aware of before. And so it was really kind of a thrill to bring this up to date and get as much in there as possible. And there are several choice things in the third printing that are not in the first two that I'm really glad to have an outlet for.
Any particular ones?
Oh, sure. Just a couple of examples. A recording I had not heard before, very early, you know, one of those somebody put their tape recorder next to their feet kind of things at an early concert. This was at the Quiet Night in 1971. Goodman doing an early version of Election Year Rag that has a bridge in it that is much more caustic and, you know, really kind of, it's a down verse, more so than the actual official version that came out. I mean, the bridge says, he sings this, go get a gun, Joe, Bob, and Bill. It ain't who gets selected, it's how many folks you kill.
Wow.
And this is at a time you have to realize that, you know, we'd just been through as a country several very prominent assassinations, and unfortunately, you know, guns in the hands of people who are not all there mentally is still an issue today. But he decided he didn't want that to be in that song because it's mostly a light satire, Election Year Rag is. But again, it was great to be able to get that little detail into the book to round out the story of that song.
Wow. Well, Clay, we need to take a short break. When we return, I'd like you to share with our audience what it was like to do a workshop at the Mariposa Folk Festival where Steve Goodman had performed in 1973 and 1974. And I'd like you to share with us why it is that Canadian audiences in particular are so fond of Steve Goodman's music. We'll be back after a short break.
Nursing home neglect is on the rise. Hi, I'm attorney Steve Karp from the Chester County personal injury law firm of Karp and Hart. My partner Peter Hart and I have seen an increase in the number of calls from families who have parents in nursing homes who have been injured. Patients who are bedridden or confined to a wheelchair require the skilled nursing care which they pay for. If they're abused or neglected, they can sustain bed sores and ulcers leading to infection and death. Our elderly clients have also suffered from falls from being left unattended. The result? A broken hip. If you believe your family member has been harmed by the neglect of a nursing home facility, give us a call. The number is 610-430-2200. That's 610-430-2200. Or check out our website at carpenthartlaw.com. The elderly should spend their last years being taken care of, not being taken advantage of. Please join us every Tuesday at noon when Karp and Hart hosts Legal Talk on WCHE.
The results are in, and you can experience the thrill of experiencing Kyle's Auto Tag and Insurance, award-winning service for all your auto tag needs, or the agony of going anywhere else. Kyle's has been voted the gold medal winner as the top auto tag and notary service in Chester County in the Daily Local Newsreader's Choice Award poll. With Kyle's 30 years of experience and his connection with the Pennsylvania Department of Motor Vehicles, he can do it all. Cars, trucks, small trailers, or even a fleet of corporate trucks. Kyle or his manager, John, will make it a smooth transaction. Need something notarized? Kyle can do that too. Kyle has two locations to serve you. The original location in the Gay Street Plaza in Westchester and their newest location in Thorndale at 57 North Bailey Road near Rafiti's Restaurant and Brenda's Vac Shop behind Kmart. And Kyle's is always less than the big wig. If you let your auto registration expire, Kyle can make you legal on the spot. Kyle's Auto Tag and Insurance, because you're entitled to great service.
Hey, what's up? I'm Matt.
I'm Kirby.
And I'm Mike, and we're from Rivers Monroe, and you're listening to WCHE 1520 AM.
The talk of Chester County.
And now, back to the WCHE Entertainment and Culture Show with your host, Stephen Brodsky.
Now, Canada has produced some really top-notch singer-songwriters. Mariposa Folk Festival has welcomed and embraced those songwriters, including Steve Goodman. Steve Goodman, Facing the Music, is published by ECW Press, which is located in Canada. Clay Eels was recently at the Mariposa Folk Festival, and seems that among the most appreciative audiences in the world for Steve Goodman music are Canadian audiences. What gives, Clay?
Well, you know, I found out from interviewing that the Canadian audiences were used to the singer-songwriters who, well, there's a great quote from the brother of Stan Rogers, Garnett Rogers, who is an Ontario-based singer, and he says that back in the 70s, the folk performers of Canada were sulky, sullen, and serious. And so then you have Steve Goodman, who is just the opposite of that. The way Garnett put it, he says, Steve bridged that thing between those navel-gazing singer-songwriter guys that I was hanging out with and these terrifyingly good vaudeville-style musicians who really wanted to entertain and kick it out. And so that was a big influence on us, seeing somebody who realized, I'm here to entertain. He would try anything, and it was like the circus had come to town. So he had a distinct appeal for any audience, really, but particularly in Canada. And he became the darling of the Mariposa Folk Festival several times in the 1970s. He even was... You know, at folk festivals, they have workshops as well as main stage performances. And at one of the workshops about improvisation, he and another musician, David Amram, improvised a song that later ended up on one of Steve's albums called Moby Book, based on the novel Moby Dick. And that was done right in the moment at Mariposa Folk Festival.
And Steve was known for absolutely wonderful instant rapport with his audiences. And my understanding, Clay, is that you had seen Steve perform in two concerts. Is that correct?
That's right. One was he was the opener for Randy Newman. This was in 1977 when Randy Newman had his only hit, Short People. And he had the ultimate short person opening for him.
And that would be Steve at 5'2".
That's right. And then I saw Steve at a solo show 4 years later in 1981. And, you know, all it took was once. Steve Martin told me, you know, he opened 200 times for Steve Martin when Steve Martin was the wild and crazy guy. And he said, you know, in 30 seconds he would have an audience. He would just one guy with a guitar, but he would grab an audience, and particularly the audiences of Steve Martin, which were a tough one to capture, because they were not there to see the opening act, you know. But Steve turned them around, and he'd get encores.
Wow! Now we opened our segment today with the City of New Orleans. That's one of the songs that really impressed Chris Christopherson, who was instrumental in getting Steve Goodman known to the world. Another song that really impressed Chris Christopherson is the song Would You Like to Learn to Dance. Say a couple of words about that, if you would, Clay.
Well, the song itself is a lovely, romantic song, and it's expressed nearly entirely in terms of questions. And it's a sort of a tentative approach to romance. And it became very popular with women in particular, you know, more of a step-by-step approach to wooing somebody rather than just coming on like gangbusters. And metaphorically, the song played right into what you were talking about. Chris Christopherson and Paul Anka were present at the key early morning breakfast where Goodman got his chance at the brass ring, and where Christofferson asked Goodman to play for Anka at 3 in the morning, would you like to learn to dance? And as soon as Goodman played that, Anka said, how would you like a plane ticket to New York? And so you could you could look at the song as sort of an entreaty, you know. How would you, Paul Anka, like to learn to dance with me?
Wow. Well, now, there's some rumors abounding that perhaps a line or two of that song is a line that Steve may have used to woo his, what was to become his wife, yes?
Yeah, that's a story that's hard to verify, but if it's whether it's real or apocryphal, it's a great story, because he played the Earl of Old Town quite a bit in Chicago, and at the Earl of Old Town, working as a waitress, was his future wife, Nancy Tenney. And Goodman, as you said, was 5'2", and Nancy was 5'10½". And it's a busy place and hustle and bustle, and Steve was coming off the stage after a set, and Nancy was just clearing the table, and she whirled around, and Steve ran right into, as Jim Post says, ran into her abundance. And looked up and said, "Would you like to learn to dance, lady?"
Wow.
And the bartender who was there, Roger Serbaugh, confirmed for me that this happened. So, you know, there is some credence to this story. Sometimes the most serious of things have a very humorous origin.
Please, let's share that song with our audience. It's Steve Goodman with "Would You Like to Learn to Dance?"
Would you like to learn to dance? I could show you that. Got a book here with all you need to know. We could draw the Arthur Murray patterns right here on the floor. All you have to do. Follow. Then we'll dance round the room like. You can leave now if you want to. I don't mind. Nothing I wouldn't do to see you smile. Your face in perfect time. Dance and cross your face in perfect time. Would you like to learn to sing? I could show you that. Here's an old song, good for a start. Sing all the high parts if you really try, while I play along, tune on this guitar. Then we'll sing for a little while. Let the harmony go ringing. Sing so much better when you sing with a smile. What makes all the notes come out so sweet and high? All the notes come out so sweet and high. Thank you. like to learn to love. That's something else again. I could show you how to sing and smile and dance.
Back with Clay Eales, Steve Goodman, biographer, after another short break. Stay with us.
If there was an emergency, would your family have enough water and non-perishable food to last 3 days? We asked families across the country. Here are some of their answers.
We usually eat fresh food daily.
In the pantry, we have canned tomatoes.
Really not survival food, tomato paste.
The brand of dog food that I do purchase are edible by humans.
Is your plan any better? To learn more about making an emergency plan for your family, go to ready.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Really not survival food, tomato.
As our world becomes more globally competitive, our students need quality teachers and schools to be successful. However, they also need the proper supplies, which can be an expense some families just can't afford. That's why Edward Jones is participating in our local school supplies donation program. There's nothing more valuable than a quality education. With your help and the help of other communities around the country, we can help ensure our children have the supplies they need to begin or continue their learning and development. You can help too. Just drop off anything from pens and paper to lunchboxes and book bags at Helen Seamus' branch office at 2928 Conestoga Road in Ludwig's Corner from July 23rd to September 30th. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, member SIPC.
What is the first thing that pops into your mind when you think of Gettysburg? Is it our rich Civil War history, battlefields, and museums? Or is it the beautiful vineyards, wine tours, and our wonderful restaurants? How about our cozy bed and breakfast, or the beautiful hotels? With everything Gettysburg has to offer, the first thing you think of might be what a great, affordable destination we are. Come visit us and find out for yourself. Log on to Gettysburg.travel and discover your Gettysburg.
The Gettysburg National Military Park Museum and Visitor Center offers unlimited inspiration for your Gettysburg experience.
The AAA Gem attraction engages visitors of all ages with the cyclorama, the film A New Birth of Freedom, and the Museum of the American Civil War. Three attractions, one ticket. Then plan your battlefield tour. Proceeds benefit battlefield preservation.
Plan for unlimited inspiration. Visit the Gettysburg National Military Park Museum and Visitor Center. Advance tickets and more information available at GettysburgFoundation.org.
Hey, I'm Dee Snider.
I'm J.J. French.
And we're from Twisted Sister. And you're listening to WCHE 1520 AM.
And now, back to the WCHE Entertainment and Culture Show with your host, Stephen Brodsky.
And we're with Clay Eales today, author of Steve Goodman, Facing the Music, now in its updated third printing. Clay, did songwriting come easy to Steve Goodman? Because sometimes you can hear him, Steve, being kind of dismissive of the songwriting process as it was for him. I don't know if that was false humility. He would say things such as, hey, I came up with a song, rather than boy, I crafted this song, I labored at this song, those kinds of words. What was the situation for him as far as the ease or difficulty of writing songs?
Well, he expressed both of those emotions. I mean, he was self-deprecating to a fault, and felt that you know, songwriting often is something that you have to catch when something comes through your head. But he also was very articulate about talking about songwriting as a craft. And, you know, he liked to make the distinction between artistry and a crafts approach, a craftsman. And there were times when journalists would ask him, you know, well, you know, is this art, or are you just going through the motions and doing this? And he says, don't put down the craftsman. You know, you go to the store and you want to buy a good pair of shoes. A craftsman made those shoes. And he took pride in songs that were concise, and even more so, songs that could put pictures in your mind. He talked very eloquently about how it's the same thing as what you learned in high school English, you know, that you don't tell somebody what to feel. You describe something so well, so concretely, so specifically, that they decide what they're going to feel themselves. And so you have you know, a picture in your mind of what is going on, and that evokes the feeling. In the song you just played, I mean, the Arthur Murray pattern on the floor, you can see that in your mind. And he talked about how he has a hard time making things up. He said he'd say, I sort of have to see it first, and then he can describe it really well and turn it into a song.
Hmm. The picture I get of Steve Goodman, the dominant picture I get of Steve Goodman from your book, Clay, is that he was a pretty well-adjusted guy, yes?
Yes, yes. And
isn't that really unusual for a master-level songwriter?
Well, sure, and he was unusual in the sense that the Steve Goodman you saw on stage was the Steve Goodman off stage, which is in
even
stark
more
contrast
unusual for a performer to be congruent that way.
Yes, that's not the usual deal. You put on a face, and then some musicians backstage or at other times can be demanding or a completely different personality. And yeah, I think that comes from his strong bases in childhood, and then, you know, you get knocked for a loop, by a huge loop, at age 20 by being diagnosed with leukemia, which in 1969 was basically a death sentence. And how do you live your life?
And he lived it with optimism. He lived it being positive. He lived it being hopeful and helpful to others. He lived it by being upbeat and filling his life with vibrant activities and going strong till the very end. Yes.
Yes, and
how did he
and
do
with
that,
a lot
Clay?
Of humor.
Clay, how?
Pardon?
How did he do that?
You know, he said that as long as you know that the sun's coming up every morning, you can laugh at pretty well near everything. You know, you have to have your question really is a deep one, and it goes to every one of us, not just Steve. And I think it really, you know, there are a lot of lessons in Steve's life. He wasn't a saint by any means, but I keep coming back to the theme of we in this world are not meant to be hermits, and that we're supposed to connect with other people. I mean, you and I are talking right now. People, we're supposed to connect with people and engage people and inspire people, and otherwise, you know, why would there be more than one person on this earth? And I think he grasped that intuitively. He was that way from his very youngest age. It wasn't just something that leukemia forced into his personality. And in part, it's why the book is so big, because there were so many people he connected with. I mean, he did more in his 36 years than most of us will if we live twice that long. The life lesson there is to live life fully, and that's not to be, you know, just sitting in a room alone.
And another artist, Clay, who really values connections, speaks of it through his own music and his own banter to audiences and in interviews, is Bruce Springsteen. And he actually connected with Steve Goodman through Goodman's song, My Old Man. Yes? Tell the story.
Well, yes. Goodman happened to be in the lobby of a hotel in Los Angeles. He was doing a recording for his One That Got Away album. He was the track that he recorded with Nicolette Larson, and he happened to be checking into the motel, and in walks Bruce Springsteen, and with a woman on his arm, and it was a chance meeting that lasted about a minute. Steve walked right up to him. He hadn't met him before. And he said, "Bruce Springsteen, love your stuff." And Springsteen immediately says, "Steve Goodman, you wrote My Old Man. That's a great song." And Steve was, he was high on that for weeks afterward, because Springsteen had just written a song of his own about his own father, and it was more of a caustic song, whereas Goodman's song was more, you know, about the lament of losing his father. And of course, there was a lot of irony in that, because Goodman, having been diagnosed with leukemia, by all bets was not going to outlive his father. But then it was turned around, and Goodman, being the older sibling, the one who had to take care of all of the arrangements and for several months didn't quite know how to address this in his own musical life. And then one night when he was on tour down in the South, I believe it was Louisiana, this song came into his mind, and he called up his friend John Prine from a phone booth, and he says, "I got one." And he would do that to Prine all the time in the middle of the night. And then he'd lay down the phone receiver and proceed to play the song for him from a phone booth. He was the first one to hear the song.
Let's play this very powerful song for our audience. It's Steve Goodman with his song, My Old Man.
I miss my old man tonight, and I wish he was here with me, with his corny jokes and his cheap cigars. He could look you in the eye and sell you a car. That's not an easy thing to do, but no one ever knew a more charming creature on this earth than my old man. He was a pilot in the big war, in the U.S. Army Air Corps, in a C-47 with a heavy load full of combat cargo for the Burma Road. And after they dropped the bomb, he came home and married Mom. And not long after that, he was my old man. And oh, the fights we had when my brother and I got him mad. He'd get all boiled up, and he'd start to shout. And I knew what was coming, so I tuned him out. And now the old man's gone, and I'd give all I own to hear what he said when I wasn't listening to my old man. I miss the old man tonight. I can almost see his face. He was always trying to watch his weight, and his heart only made it to 58. For the first time since he died, late last night I cried. I wondered when I was gonna do that for my old.
The next very special edition of the Chester County Historical Society's popular History on Tap series takes place Monday, September 10th at 6 p.m. at the Marshallton Inn on the eve of the 235th anniversary of the Battle of the Brandywine. Historical Society President Rob Lukens welcomes Tom McGuire, author of numerous books on the American Revolution, for a vivid presentation on the role of Marshallton Center House building played in the historic battle back when it was Martin's Tavern. Friends of Martin's Tavern Vice President Linda Cott will give an overview of the tavern's history and accompany attendees on a guided tour of the building. This 30-minute presentation and question and answer session is absolutely free. For more information, call the Chester County Historical Society at 610-692-4800 or visit online at chestercohistorical.org. History on Tap is sponsored by Susquehanna Bank and your friends here at WCHE 1520 AM, the talk of Chester County.
Royal Pest Solutions is a planet-friendly pest control company that protects you from destructive, annoying pests. If you see any termites, ants, mice, or any pests, your real pest problem is what you don't see, nests or colonies where pests harbor. Call Royal Pest and let a Royal Pest professional do a free inspection. They'll show you our planet-friendly approach to protecting your home, family, or business. Call 1-800-ROYAL-PEST, visit royalpest.com, or just Google Royal Pest. Royal Pest, planet-friendly solutions to your pest problems. Royal Pest Solutions offers planet-friendly pest control with high impact on pests and the lowest possible impact on the environment. We think greener. We focus on eliminating the source of your pest problem, finding nests, removing the pest's food supply, fixing cracks to keep ants out, and correcting conditions that attract termites, keeping pests outside before they're a problem inside. Call 1-800-ROYAL-PEST, visit royalpest.com, or just Google Royal Pest. Royal Pest, planet-friendly solutions to your pest problems.
Hey, everybody, I'm Juliana Rancic from E! Entertainment Television, and you are listening to WCHE 1520 AM.
And now, back to the WCHE Entertainment and Culture Show with your host, Stephen Brodsky.
And we're back with Clay Ailes. Clay, Steve Goodman covered the widest range of emotions in his songs, and certainly, my gosh, he covered the emotion of sadness in the song we played, My Old Man. You can hear him breaking up there. That was not shtick, correct?
Not at all. He came into the studio and he said, turn on the tape. And then when he was done with that, he said, that's take one and done.
And done.
He didn't want to do another one.
And that was it?
That was it. And he you know, in the studio, you can correct things. But he didn't want to do that. He told a journalist later that it was the kind of thing that an imperfection that makes something better. He says, we're human. That's how it goes. That's the way the eggs look sometimes. Sometimes they have a little spot on them. I can't help it. I can't help thinking that Venus had a couple of pimples, you know. I'm not making any comparisons. I'm just saying that anything that's really good to me has something about it that's just a little askance so that you can see the rest of it. And again, it's an example of what he said about he kind of needed to see it first in order to write about it. And of course, his father was a great subject for that. And the brilliance of it is that it is so specific that it becomes universal. We all identify with it because we can see it in our minds, and we all summon our own fathers, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Was he most pleased with his sad songs, his happy songs? Did he have any personal preference?
As far as genre, no. He called himself the hectic eclectic. And he prided himself in that wide range. I mean, today it's kind of a strange question because people don't buy their music in a record store largely. But back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, where would you find a Steve Goodman album? Would it be folk, rock, country, blues? I mean, he show tunes? He did everything. And that was part of what he prided himself on in performance, was to take the audience one place and then quickly take them another. Pacing was a huge thing for him. And probably that eclecticism on his record albums was a factor in his not being able to be easily pigeonholed, and therefore not, you know, he says the unkind review is, I have no focus. And whereas he had expertise in them all, and so it was hard to put a simplistic label on him.
And hurt him as far as marketing of his songs.
Yeah, and you know, you're supposed to. I mean, the best entertainers don't just stick with one kind of song, but that's how we know them. You know, we know them as they do this kind of thing, and he knew that the range of human emotions is all over the map, and the range of human experiences, and sometimes you can be, you have a death sentence on your shoulder, and yet something is laugh out loud funny about the very same thing. I mean, and I think that's a real hallmark of his music and his approach to music and his approach to people, you know.
Tell us, if you would, Clay, about his song In Real Life.
Well, this is a song that did not get public release until 3 years after his death. He recorded a number of songs that were in the canon. Some of them still are. And this is a co-write with a man named Bill LeBounty, who at the time, he now lives in Nashville, but at the time lived on Arrowhead Lake outside of Los Angeles. And this was right at the time, about 1980 or so, when Goodman was sort of drowning in a sea of non-commercial endeavor. In other words, he was not having commercial success. He was about to be dropped by his record company, and he was straining at that success, trying to do songs that really weren't like him. And so he was paired up with some people who had some hits. Bill LeBounty had co-written This Night Won't Last Forever with Michael Johnson, and everybody in Goodman's musical family, so to speak, thought that it would be a good pairing. And so they wrote several quite affecting songs together, and it never became a hit. But the thing to listen for in this song is that many years after Goodman's death, 10 years after his death, the definitive CD package was released of Goodman's work. It was called an anthology, and the name of the anthology was No Big Surprise. And that's a straight lift out of this song, In Real Life. It's a very poignant song. It's sort of It's the kind of song where, you know, people say one thing and then they do another. It's a lament about how we treat people sometimes, and the phrase "no big surprise" is so characteristic of Goodman's sort of shrug about his own success, or his shrug about the gifts that he had, the downplaying his brilliance, and the fact that he just slipped it right in there, I think is very clever and affecting at the same time.
Let's share that with our audience. It's Steve Goodman singing "In Real Life."
There she goes. Well, how could she leave me? Doesn't she need me? She was never really there. Feels so cold. Oh, what a shame now. It happens all the time in real life. In my dreams, stands in the moonlight. She looks into my eyes and tells me she will stay.
This hour has just flown on by, so your seventh visit isn't enough visits for us. I want to get you back again, Clay.
Sure.
This story bears telling over and over again. And in real life, Steve Goodman was a good-natured guy, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Definitely. He's very well-named, Steve Goodman.
Absolutely. There's one scene that's described in your book of Steve Goodman himself suffering from cancer, playing in Sloan Kettering Hospital for other patients, cheering them up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one of many, many anecdotes. And when Steve Goodman was discovered, he said, "You think I'm good?" And he referred people to his friend John Prine as being even better.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us very quickly that anecdote, if you would, please.
Well, that was at that 3 a.m. meeting in Chicago with Christofferson and Anka. And, you know, think about it yourself. If you have this chance at national prominence and you've been a hardworking local club musician for years, and somebody says, "How would you like a plane ticket to New York?" Your first thought might be,
"I'm going."
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm going. But the first thing out of his mouth, the first serious thing out of his mouth was, "Well, if you think I'm good, you got to hear my friend John Prine." The first real thing out of his mouth was, you know, "How would you like a plane ticket to New York? Well, how would you like to see the short, fat Jewish kid dive into the vat of chicken Kiev?" humor to the end. And without Goodman, we would probably not know about John Prine, at least not in the same way. He brought him right along with him, and they were musical buddies their whole lives together, and Prine continues to pay tribute to Steve Goodman in every concert he does. He sings his song called Souvenirs, which is about friendship, and certainly they had a very strong musical friendship.
Clay, I thank you for your friendship and for revisiting with us today, and you have a good weekend, and come back soon.
No problem. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.